The old world is dying. The new world struggles to be born. Now is the time of monsters. With those words from Gramsci, I welcome you to the Time of Monsters podcast. I'm Jeet here of The Nation magazine. This podcast is sponsored by The Nation and is widely available on all podcasting platforms. Now this week, we're going to take something that is perhaps monstrous, but is maybe monstrous in a more comic mode than the usual political news that we cover, which is the rise of the scam economy. If you're like me, you probably get a lot of emails offering you jobs at very nebulous sort of companies. These have sort of replaced the infamous Nigerian prince scam that older listeners will remember from the early days of the internet. Now, I think, and if you're also like me, you probably just delete them and forget about them. But fortunately, my guest today, Alex Salmon, feature writer for Slate, has done something a bit more. He's actually followed through and found out what exactly is going on, doing a sort of participant experiment on himself to see like what would happen if you follow through on one of these seeming scams. First of all, Alex, I'm very happy to have you on. Thanks for being on the program.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me back. Always a pleasure to be on with you, Jeet.
Now, I will be linking to Alex's piece in the show notes, and I cannot really recommend it highly enough. I was just like laughing so hard when I was reading this article. I think it actually, like, thinking about it, a lot of Alex's reporting falls under the terrain of sort of like gonzo journalism. Like, what happens if you go to a car dealer's convention, and what are the types of people that you see? But I think that this piece in particular does something a little bit interesting, because I think it's hard to do gonzo journalism in the age of the internet, where we're all kind of like on cyberspace and some of us are not even real. But within that nebulous realm, I think Alex has done an amazing job of conveying what that experience is actually like. And I think the piece is both hilarious, but it has sort of broader political implications for the fact that we are actually living in a scam economy where there's like these amazing number of frauds that one gets on one's phone and email for seemingly like, and this is something we'll take up, you know, sort of penny ante results. We're not talking about Bernie Madoff here. Alex, let's just start with your story. How did you become a part of this scam economy?
Yeah. So I like you and like everybody else, I think, you know, I've been getting this torrent of texts to my phone from, you know, sometimes they're from sort of plausible seeming phone numbers. Oftentimes they're not even, they're from email accounts or they're from numbers from foreign country codes. And, you know, was doing the same thing, right? Reporting them as spam or deleting them and not thinking too much about it. But then, you know, then I talked to my editor and I was like, you know, maybe we should just see this thing through, and which is sort of a terrifying proposition, because I obviously don't know how is it real? Is it even going to work? Like, yeah. What's the punishment on the other side look like? So yeah, I think this was probably in May that we had this conversation about seeing this through, and had to stake out like how scammed was I willing to get? Like what risks are we willing to take to pursue this thing? But I ended up getting a message. And it, to that point, I think was probably the lowest effort message I'd received. It was like a group text with multiple numbers. There were numerous country codes from the Philippines, which obviously has this reputation for digital scammery. And it was like from Indeed, quote unquote. And they were reaching out because of my great and exceptional traits to offer me this this remote job that was going to be like extremely light work and extremely high pay. And yeah,
well, so, I want that. Can I get extremely light work for high pay?
Right. I mean, you know, and it was like, well, based on my great qualifications, I'd always thought I had great qualifications. So,
yeah, no, and I should mention, like, you know, like I think participating in a scam is always great journalism, but there are risks. I think some listeners will remember a New York Magazine article where a financial consultant or financial writer for New York Magazine participated in a kind of scam naively, not knowingly, the way Alex did, and ended up losing something on the order of $50,000. So I can imagine some trepidation on your part that you're going to enter into the sort of, you know, dark realm of the internet where suddenly all your banking information could end up in nefarious hands.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, it's like I was trying to put on a brave face here, but you know, at the time I was like, I'm ready to get scammed like a little bit, but I, you know, if I end up like losing access to like my phone number and my email account and like all my bank accounts and all my social accounts and all this stuff, I was like, you know, you hear these harrowing stories about, you know, one, you click on one link and it's all over. And
No, I mean, I remind people that, like, you know, was it Leon Panetta or is somebody in Clinton's circle, you know, pressed on a phishing site and then suddenly, like, you know, we had WikiLeaks having all the documents of the DNC, you know, to changing the results of the 2016 election. So you were entering into, like, you know, dangerous territory here.
Yeah. And it's one of those things, right? It's like on this spectrum where you're like, is this thing even real? Like the actual phishing email, the actual primary inquiry offering me this job was so poorly rendered, you know, and so sort of unpersuasive that it was like, is there really anything on the other side of this, or is this just, you know, just trying to see if they send a text, will the number ping? Or is it right? Is it a more sophisticated thing where they're gonna send me a link to click, and all of a sudden I'm gonna be deleted from the face of the internet? And yeah, so in the early goings, at least I was, yeah, there was some trepidation. I wasn't dying to get this started.
No, let's actually talk about, like, the fact that the email was so, like, poorly worded and whatnot, and like, maybe you can speculate a little bit about, you know, like, who are actually the targets for these things. Because I mean, like you, and I think, like, maybe a lot of listeners, people read these emails and they're like, who's gonna fall for this?
Right.
Why does this industry even exist? So any thoughts on, like, and I know you did some research talking to people from the FTC, but like who gets victimized by these things? I
Yeah, you
mean, usually it's not slate writers, I imagine.
know.
Or
Yeah,
it could be
well,
New York Magazine writers. That
yeah.
I believe, but not slate writers.
Yeah, I mean, if it is mostly slate writers, they usually keep it to themselves. So, yeah, it's interesting, right? Because yeah, it's right. It seems so ridiculous, and I think that probably is an issue. And it actually sort of plays into how it functions because no one wants to come forward and say like, you know, I fell for this thing because it does seem so ludicrous. But it obviously it is effective at some level, and I think generally it's, you know, targeting people who don't have a high level of digital fluency. It's targeting people who don't have work permits in the United States, which obviously now it's a much more salient issue under the Trump administration, maybe than it even was before. I think with, you know, the retrenchment of work from home arrangements, you know, post pandemic, it's much harder to get these online jobs that were, or these sort of work from home jobs that were so commonplace a few years ago. So I think that it sort of plays on all of that. It's sort of a lack of, and then, you know, obviously people who are not fluent in English themselves, I think if you're ESL, the sort of parade of typos and malapropisms doesn't really strike you, I think, as, you know, for me, you know, seeing this stuff, I'm like, well, that is obviously not how you phrase that.
No, I mean, it is worth pointing out. And I actually got it wrong. It was not Leon Panetta, it was John Podesta. But I mean,
Right.
like, you know, like the most famous phishing scandal of, like, modern times involved someone who was, like, a high-level advisor to Hillary Clinton, you know, like clicking on the wrong thing and leading to a massive security breach that arguably, like, you know, changed the history of the 21st century. A lot of people
Right.
can fall for this, and the level of people without digital literacy, like, you know, just is also includes just, like, older people, right? Like, just includes people
Totally.
who are or people who aren't familiar with this stuff. So on some level, like, the fact that it exists and there is seemingly, like, a multi-million dollar industry built around this indicates that, yeah, on some level this stuff works. Although maybe we can, I think your experience might raise some questions about, like, how does it even work?
Yep.
But yeah, let's continue with your story. So you know, with some trepidation, you know, some legitimate concern, you decided to go forward with this. But I would imagine you also had, like, some security backup through Slate in terms of, like, you know, trying to protect yourself from the sort of Podesta scenario where all your emails suddenly get released to the world.
Right. Yeah. So I did take some precautions. I met with the wonderful Slate IT department, which is one person named Shasha, who's great, was very helpful to me in this, and she sort of helped me pick out places I might fall, there are holes that I might fall into. They let me borrow like a burner laptop basically, so I was not logged into my email. I wasn't logged into any of, you know, any accounts of any real consequence, and So I respond. I mean, the funny thing is I took those precautions. At a certain level, you can't do that much. And so once I responded and said, yeah, I would love that job, they were like, okay, you know, give us your WhatsApp number and we'll reach out. And you know, I guess I could have set up a fake WhatsApp. At a certain point, I was like, you know, I started cutting some corners. So I gave them my WhatsApp number, and then I got a message from a woman named Kathy. She was my quote unquote coach, my coach, my boss, my mentor, my friend, depending on the day. And she said she was from this company called Interleave. And then the way that she described this job, which is very funny, was like something that like could, I guess, have been something that people do on the internet. It was sort of like this parade of internet gobbledygook, where it was like, effectively, the job that I was offered was, as far as I understood it, was juicing play counts for like low performing songs in Spotify and other streaming services so that they'll get favorable treatment but from the algorithm and be more likely to be included in things like TikTok or Instagram Reels, which obviously would mint royalties. And they were like, oh, this is, you know, AI informed or AI infused, but also like, we have to use our real information and we have to use our real,
you know. Yeah, no, one should mention that that is not completely implausible, right? Because there is like, you know, I think a lot of people have the idea that like everything on the internet is like bots and there's like a lot of fake stuff, but actually there's a lot of tasks, including tasks that are nominally AI, that are actually done by real humans, usually in like, you know, poor parts of the world, like for very little wages, but you actually need like a physical person clicking those buttons. And so it is a kind of weird Wizard of Oz effect, where there is actually, you know, like somebody behind the curtain, usually like somebody very poor. So in that sense, like you could imagine what they're describing as having some bearing on reality, right?
Yeah, totally. Right. There was actually nothing, you know, it wasn't perfect English, but like beyond that, there wasn't anything in that description that I was like, well, this is definitely not real. Like that is, it's exactly as you say, that is a thing. Like even now, you know, behind these high-end AI programs, they're often like, you know, engineers in places like India who are cleaning up these data sets, and they're, you know, it's being passed off as AI when it's very much not artificial. It's very much a human labor. And yeah, you know, like click farms, these things are like, these are real, you know. It's like, the question is more if it's like socially valuable rather than if it exists, and like this stuff exists. So at that point I was like, all right, you know, that's all the emphasis on like using my personal information, like my real personal information and my real whatever. I was like, I don't love that, but, you know, no reason to turn back at this point. I did, you know, I will say I was dragging my feet at that point still. And in a couple days passed, I think between, Kathy informing me as to the contours of this role and me actually doing the training. And at some point I got a phone call from a phone number that I didn't recognize, and I answered it, and there's a very perturbed woman on the other end, and she was like, what's going on? And I was like, who is this? And she was like, it's Kathy. And I was like, I'm sorry, who is that? And she was like, do you want this job or not? And I was like, oh, Kathy. I was like, oh my God. And you know, that was like a real person on the other end, which was interesting because, you know, that was, you know, that was incidental in that sense. It wasn't like part of the great plan to tease her out, but she called me and she spoke English, and I don't think it was an AI, you know, it wasn't a robotic voice on the other end. It was a person expressing, you know, consternation at a regular human clip. So,
No, actually Kathy does come across as both a real person and actually a character in your piece. Right. That there's a kind of, you know, as you said, she's her job was to be your life coach and mentor, and she does seem to have like a tough love approach of but both calling you to task when you're not like responding quickly enough and like don't seem quite serious about the job, but then later also rewarding you, you know, with compliments when you do prove able to click on those buttons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's very interesting.
So Kathy, like, yeah, she's initially, like, in your account, like, does have that more the sort of tough side of, like, get it together, Alex. Like, what are you doing with your life? Are you, do you want this job or not?
Yeah.
So, describe this, like, how this relationship was forming. She's able to sort of neg you into, like, being more serious about this lark that you're doing.
Right. Which is so funny is, you know, because it's like, it is, it's obviously like this whole thing is about technology at some level, mm-hmm. It's digital tools and, you know, WhatsApp and Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, all this stuff. But also it's like a little bit about like grind set culture and like the sort of cultural export that is so popular on the internet, which is like, you know, self maximization and realization and stuff. And so, yeah, you know, she like, you know, was sending me all these messages about like how this job had changed her life and like, you know, go back and forth between being like disappointed by my work ethic and like my unwillingness to be available at various hours. But then also, you know, was talking in very clear terms about like the stuff that you, especially if you're on the, in like male parts of the internet, you see all the time about like grinding and like raising yourself up to a different level and like multiple streams of income and like a lot of this stuff. So yeah, she, you know, it was a little rocky from the get-go because I, you know, I wasn't dying to get scammed. And so I was slow going. And there were very funny quirks that came out of that where like she messaged me wishing me like a meaningful Juneteenth. And she, you know, had like really wonderful, heartening things to say to me on certain days about how I was going to like seize the moment and take advantage of all the opportunities that were ahead of me. And then obviously the criticisms that followed. But you know, eventually she got me on the path. You know, she got me going.
Yeah, no, she seems like a good mentor. I mean, like she was like she stuck by you. You know, like yeah, didn't let you fall by the wayside. And yeah, like I said, you had the proper mixture of carrot and stick. You know, like
totally.
the reward that's out there for you, but also you know you got to get. You got to take your punishment when you're not up to the job. So how does it, so to get this job and nominally get paid, you became involved with this kind of like infrastructure on the internet. So just basically describe what the job was like and what you were doing.
Yeah. So, you know, when it came time for me to finally do my training, she obviously sent me this link to this website. And that was my fear, was like, here, you know, this is like my Podesta moment, is I'm going to hit this link and like the whole thing's going to go black and green and it looked like the Matrix or whatever. I'll never see my wife and children again. So she sent me this link to this company called Interleave. The website was like interleavekk.com. Obviously there was no getting around clicking that. So I opened it. It wouldn't open in, I think most of the browsers that I have wouldn't open it for security concerns, but I was able to get through it on Safari and I had to set up an account there. So obviously I had to give over my email and I had to give over, you know, it was more my phone number as well, to get in. And you know, it's like, you're trying to anticipate like, all right, where is this going? Is this a real thing? And I logged into the website and the website, you know, like the portal did work. It was this very eerie looking photo of like a male mannequin was the lock screen, but I logged in and then there were a bunch of clips from like video games that were being played on a loop inside of this thing. There are all these logos of video game companies, none of which is totally explained, right? Because like she didn't mention that we were involved in like the video game industry at all. Strangely enough, that like the World Food Program also factored in here. There was like the logo of like the UN's World Food Program. And at some point when she was recruiting me, quote unquote, to this job, she mentioned that like it wasn't all about making money. It was also an altruistic undertaking because we would be donating part of our profits to the World Food Program. So I got into this portal and as I went through this training and. Initially, she was like, the training's going to take an hour, you know, and I thought maybe it would be, you know, obviously I have no idea what I'm getting into. What it ends up being ultimately is there's like a 3x3 grid and it's all album covers. And in the middle is the start button and you click the start button and then the album covers flash and then one pops up and then you hit success or whatever. You hit return basically. And those two clicks basically complete the task. And they actually, if you put the mouse in the right spot, you don't even have to move the mouse at all. So, you know, and she went through this process very dutifully of being like, all right, now click start. And then I have to send her a screenshot of me clicking start. And then, you know, the thing would pop up and I would click return or select, and I'd send her a screenshot of that. And I did, I think, you know, 90 times, and each time I would have to send a screenshot, and each time she'd be like, you're doing great. Like, have you done this before? Like, you're showing a real aptitude. you know, it's like, all right. Yeah. I was like, I do spend a lot of time on the computer. And you know, since we did this thing. And the funny thing was that you know, I guess the scam sort of laid itself out, you know, hindsight being 2020, laid itself out right away. And that, you know, 2/3 of the way through my training, I hit a bumble, which was sort of the thing on which this whole scam, hinges. But at the time I was like, I don't know what's going on here. I have no idea what any of this is. And the Bumble was the Bumble, which I think was supposed to be a bundle, but Kathy insisted on referring to it as a Bumble, was, you know, it was like, oh, she said it was like, oh, you know, multiple songs that are low performers. If you get them all at once, like it jams up the thing. And you know, the only way for us to dislodge this is for you to send us some Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And then once we do that, then like the account will be funded and the rewards will actually be much greater. And it was like, it was this very long explanation. It was full of like sort of technical language. And I was like, I don't know that I understand what this means, but I don't think that I need to understand it. And I was like, okay, so what happens? And she was like, well, this is training. So I'll cover this one. And I think it was like $290 in Bitcoin. Yeah. She was like, I'll send it. And I was like, okay, you know, that makes plenty of sense. And even the way in which it was sent, I mean, you know, it's interesting because she was like, it wasn't like, oh, she'll handle it. It was like, she was like, you need to text the customer service and let them know that you've hit a bumble and that, that you need to and that you're sending Bitcoin over. So I had to pull up another number on WhatsApp. And I texted the customer service, which again also is like a familiar phrase for us. Customer, yes. Like customer service doesn't really feel like the right thing for a job. You know, it's like when you're.
Yeah, no, it's not usually the people, you're not usually paid by customer service. Right. But yeah. No, I mean, again, it's. Yeah, maybe appealing to people that aren't that familiar.
Right.
Yeah. And, but.
Yeah. So anyway, and you know, not to get too in the weeds of what, but she, you know, she was like sent me a screenshot of this thing, of this Bitcoin transaction, and she was like, copy this screenshot and then send it to the customer service, and I was like, okay, so I did, and then customer service referred to me only as esteemed collector, and so customer service said, dear esteemed collector, your account has been reset, like please continue your work, And that was, you know, that was sort of how the first day went. That was the training. And those were sort of the players, you know. From there on out, it was like me, Kathy, and the customer service. And that's what I was doing. I was, you know, I was clicking in the middle of the screen 80 times a day. They wouldn't let me do any more than that because I was still a beginner. But that was it. And like every day, every morning, I would get a text from Kathy that would be, you know, like, rise and shine. Today's the day that you change your life. And I, you know. Some days I would be in there and I would be hammering away, and other days I would skip it because I had other things to do. But yeah, that was sort of those are the players, and that was the game.
And she would like lambaste you if you did take like a weekend off or something like that, because you're supposed to have the grinder mindset. You're supposed to be working, right? And so what exactly? Theoretically, you're being paid for this, right? Like that you're collecting like money, you know, or credit or whatever while this is going on, right?
Yeah.
And so how much money were they saying that you were getting from this activity of clicking 80 times a day?
Yeah, it's interesting because I there were two separate numbers. One of them was like profit and the other one was some other thing. I forget exactly the term that they used. But there were two accounts basically on my screen, and they were obviously going up all the time. And you know, I think that, what did I make per day? I mean, at some point they pledged me, you know, they said that I'd be making thousands of, if I worked 30 days in a row, I'd be making like thousands of dollars. I don't think that even my screen showed that I was on track for that. I think I was, you know, up get around like, it took me a couple of days to get to like $80 or 70, 80 bucks. I mean, the account funding kept going up and up, but the profit was inching along. And I don't even know how those two numbers interacted. But I did. Yeah. On the days that I worked, the number would go up, and it was interesting. Cause I was like, at a certain point I was like, I would love to get the show on the road here. Like, I don't really just want to work in this click farm forever. I would like to actually get scammed. So I can have something to show for my efforts. And it took a couple of days, and obviously, you know, I took days off. I won't lie about that. But it took a couple of days for me to finally hit a bumble and be asked for some money. And I think that it must have been a handful of days in, maybe a little more than a week. But yeah, when the first ask finally came, it took like a shockingly long time. And I was like, at this point, I was like, dude, I'm a little sick of all this clicking. Like, it's not like, you know, it's a,
yeah.
I would love for us to get moving here. And then, you know, finally I did, I hit a bumble. And Kathy was like, this is fantastic news. Like, I, you know, you're so smart. I didn't realize that you had this in you. Like, what great luck. You know, and I was like, awesome. You know, that's cool. And she was like, for us to keep going, like, you're going to need to send. She was like, oh, you have $85. You've earned $85. You're going to have to get to $100 to get out of this. So you're going to have to send some money to the customer service. And she was like, you're going to send $18. And I was like, okay, but 85 plus 18 is not 100. That's 103.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, just, you know, get into Cash App, get the Bitcoin, send it. And I was like, all right, you know, here we go. And which is funny too, because I don't use Bitcoin. And so I was not actually apprised of the ways in which this is transacted. And so I put money into this Cash App account and I bought this Bitcoin. And of course it was like, if you want to buy Bitcoin, they bleed you on transaction fees. So I was like, I put $18 in, and then it was like, okay, well, it's going to be $3 to buy the stuff. And I was like, or $2 only to buy it. I was like, oh shit. So I couldn't even buy enough Bitcoin. So I put more money in, but then they won't let you buy in intervals that are that small. And then I had to make two Bitcoin purchases, and the Bitcoin went down in value like dramatically the second that I bought it. And then there was another transaction fee to send it to somebody else. And so I ended up having to negotiate with Kathy, and she agreed that I could send $17 instead of $18 because I couldn't get to $18. Like, every time I tried to get to $18 worth, it would just kept going down.
Okay, no. At this point, like, if the listeners like me, they might be wondering, wait a minute, so all this effort, you know, of this Kathy person who had like phoned you and was like interacting with you for many days for, you know, $18, maybe with a little haggling, $17, right?
Yeah,
She's like an enormous amount of effort for a very small amount of money.
Right, which is totally, it was incredible. I was like, yeah, it's like, if that's all they're going to run me for, like, I thought for sure that, you know, we'd be looking at a bigger ask, or that they, you know, that they had their sights on something more substantial, but it was like $18 to keep this gravy train rolling. And I was like, all right, you know, obviously I was happy to get down to 17, although, you know, Cash App made out probably better than anyone in this, in this whole economy. But you know, I did eventually send the $17, but right. It was incredible. It's like, she really put a lot of time in with me to this point. And like, that was the only exchange that had been made, is I sent the $17 and they cleared my account. That you know, the customer service gave me the go ahead, and I was back to work clicking away. At that point I was like, okay, now that I've contributed something, I feel like probably how this scam works is that I put in this money.
Yeah.
And then I can cash out, and then they'll say, all right, well, if you want to do the next thing, you got to put more money back in.
Yeah.
And it goes back and forth. And, you know, in the end, it's like gambling. You know, you win a few, lose a few, but the house crushes you because you win the big ones, or they win the most of them. So then I started trying to cash out after that. And and that actually, that didn't go that well. There was a, that introduced a level of, of tension into this relationship with Kathy. That was
She was not pleased when you tried to cash out. Like, and although I should actually mention, like, as this is going on, you found out more information about Kathy. Like, she has this whole history of being from the Netherlands, and
So I was so curious about her, because like we spoke on the phone, and she was, you know, she was obviously messaging me at all hours, and so I was like, can you tell me about yourself? And show me the story about how she had like grown up in the Netherlands in the town of Enschede, which was, you know, a little dubious. The spelling didn't make any sense. But she was like, you know, I grew up there. I was married. It was a bad marriage. I went through this painful divorce. Afterwards, I traveled around sort of in search of myself, and I ended up in the United States, and I with a cousin and some distant family, and got a job in a restaurant. But the restaurant job, she was exposed to like constant sexual harassment from the clientele, but made a good friend on the wait staff, and the friend on the wait staff turned out to be the plug who had insight on, you know, digital work from home jobs, like the one that we were doing. And so she had started doing that, and that was 10 months ago, and it had like changed her life forever. And and it was like this very involved tale, you know. It was
Kathy did the emotional labor, right? Of this scam. Like, she created this, I'm guessing, based on the evidence that she provided, fictional story. But she it was not just, creating the mentor relationship with you, but like, you know, creating a whole narrative universe, Kathy's cinematic universe.
Totally. And it was like sensitive to like contemporary social attitudes. Like the stuff about like sexual assault in the workplace felt like, I mean, obviously we say that this is no longer like the Me Too era, but it was, you know, it's sort of like, it felt topical at some level, the way that she like presented this stuff. And, I mean, obviously there were also some issues in that, like, you know, the town that she was from, the Netherlands, like it doesn't, that wasn't how anyone would spell that in Dutch or in English. Her accent, when I spoke to her, did not seem like a Dutch accent. And then of course I got a notification on my LinkedIn that someone had viewed my profile sort of while this was going on, while I was getting this story from her. And it was someone based in the Philippines, a virtual assistant based in the Philippines, who worked for work at home jobs. And so I, which was a very funny, it was kind of my LinkedIn to show me this, this thing at that crucial moment. So I did eventually ask her. I was like, hey, Kathy, are you based in the Philippines? And she was like, no, why would you say that? I live in Arlington, Virginia, USA.
She might be CIA. I mean.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So it was funny. Yeah. You know, it was very, you know, at least on like a personal level, she really went above and beyond in terms of the story. And like, you know, I was like, how many people are you, do you have working for you? And she was like, I have 20 people and they're all over the world. And, you know, it was basically at every turn much more involved than I would have expected, you know.
For, and I have to underscore this, $17. And there's like, you know, like, you know, let's say they are, take that face value, there's like another 20, 25 Alex Salmons all over the world that are also like, you know, she has a complex digital relationship with, presumably like in that range of, you know, $17-$18. But as you said, like, you know, like when you try to take out the cash out the money, that's when the problem started.
So you know, and this is the problem too, is that at a certain point I was like, all right, she's obviously trying to scam me, but I was like, maybe I can, you know, it's like, yeah, maybe I can reverse this on her, you know, I can get a little money out of this arrangement myself to my Bitcoin wallet, and I can and I can cut and run, you know, and see if I can scam the scammers. And yeah, so I tried to cash out a couple of times, and of course, you know, predictably, it, you know, my first couple attempts failed. Kathy would claim that both or all of those attempts, she was like, you never listen to me. You always go quiet when I'm trying to help you get paid. Like, where do you go? Where do you disappear to? And I was like, I've been texting you the whole time, Kathy. I'm right here. And she's like, no, like, why do you, you know, why do you behave this way? Like, what's going on? And so a couple times it failed. And then I was like, all right, I'm just going to stop alerting her to my attempts to cash out because I obviously she is trying to intervene and keep that from happening. So I did one attempt without her knowledge. And then the customer service reached out to me and was like, what's going on? You can't do that. And I was like, well, I'd like to get paid. And the customer service was, said, well, your account won't function if it doesn't have more than $100 in it. You have to have $100 in it at all times. And at that point, I think I had earned like $125. And so I was like, all right, cool. I'll just take out $25 then and I'll leave the $100 in. And at that point, I was like, well, I've only put in $17. So that's still $8.
Yeah, we get profit.
Yeah. I'm feeling great about that. And then the customer service was like, you also can't make any incremental withdrawals. You can only withdraw the total amount. And also, you always have to have at least $100 in the account.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was like, okay, so there actually is no way for me to get paid.
They created a catch-22 situation.
They had patched the one hole in this arrangement, which is that the money can only go one direction, basically. Yeah. And I think that must have sounded some alarms because, pretty quickly thereafter, I was like, all right, I'll keep clicking and just see what happens next. Pretty soon thereafter, then I hit another Bumble. And so it froze up my account and they were like, you got to send $79, like $79 to keep this thing going, which is obviously a step up from 17.
It's a bigger ask. Yeah.
Bigger ask. But at this point, I would be at it for like 6 weeks, it wasn't like, but I was like, and I was like, do I need to pay the $79? Like, and then I was like, I guess it's not very sporting of me finally only pay the 17 and call it quits. So I did eventually, I spent, however much $90 on Cash App trying to get $79 of Bitcoin, and I bought that and I sent it over, and I was like, all right, well, this will at least buy me a little more time. Maybe I can get more information out of Kathy. But at this point, the thing was sort of rolling downhill, and then I had another Bumble basically the next time I went to work, and for that one they wanted $350, and you see this thing the building speed in real time, and at that point I was like, I don't think that there's anything else for me to see here exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I told Kathy I was gonna tender my resignation, that I was frustrated by my inability to get paid, and that I had suspicions that this was in fact a scam. And she, an incredible, I have to hand it to her. She was like, did not break character and was like, why would you say that? Like, you don't know anything about this job. Like, you're not working hard enough. You've just started. Like, I'm trying to help you succeed, and you're saying terrible things. And I was like, Kathy, I intend to write about this experience. Like, I would love to know like what the truth is. And she was like, the truth is that you've only just begun, and you aren't working hard enough. And like, and this job could change your life if you would let it. And I was like, okay, well, I think I have to resign, sadly. And she was like, I don't know. I don't understand. Why would you do that? And it was, and actually that wasn't the end of it. I will say that, she got banned on WhatsApp multiple times, obviously because of her behavioral patterns. Obviously the WhatsApp was sort of wise what was happening, but she popped up on a new number this week and messaged me multiple times and was like, I don't understand what happened to you. Like,
She's not willing to give up on you. I think that's to her credit. She could make a good, a productive digital worker out of you yet. We're getting near the end of the conversation, but I just want to very briefly, as I mentioned earlier, just draw out some of the political economy of this, because this scammer economy, as you mentioned in your piece, fits in with some broader patterns. There has been a kind of, with both the crypto, Bitcoin, sort of deregulation, and as you said, the Grindr mindset. So do you want to just quickly say something about that, about how this larger Trump political economy has allowed this sort of very penny ante scam to flourish?
Yeah, right. I think that there is obviously, I think it's pretty funny, and at no point I think this story was terribly serious, but I think there is the ubiquity of these texts obviously would indicate that there is a lot of this stuff going on. And I think the reason that they've gotten so ubiquitous is for real reasons of governance and of political economy. And the truth is, I spoke with the FTC about this when I was going into, when I had my job offer in hand. I went and talked to them and asked, what they thought. And you know, the numbers that they've gathered on this stuff are like pretty substantial. The amount of money that's being wrung out of people through these scams and these task scams specifically. And part of the reason that is that's happening is because departments like the FTC have been totally hollowed out. Like, this is a big part of the Trump governance project, is to get rid of any of these sort of like a regulatory agencies that would have hemmed in cryptocurrency, that would have hemmed in these sort of digital scams. The FTC is one of them. The CFPB is another one, right? Like, these are groups that are just squarely in the crosshairs of the Trump administration. So they've hollowed out the sort of the regulatory authority that was there to keep this stuff from happening. And then at the same time, they've gone obviously totally crypto maximalist. And that's not just, I mean, obviously Trump is a great exemplar of this. But that's also been sort of a bipartisan thing. The cryptocurrency industry has spent an astonishing amount of money in Washington to get its, you know, its favorite legislation through. They passed the Genius Act, which was their sweetheart bill that they wrote, and they paid hundreds of millions of dollars to get this thing across the line. And you know, so it is like a real serious political economy. And I think even a question of, like, in general, the sort of like socially valueless labor that sort of pervades, like, what, you know, David Graeber wrote about this at some level with, I don't know if we're allowed to say the full thing, but BS jobs. It's like, you know, there actually is a question too of like, what is even going on with this stuff? So you know, these technologies that have been created don't seem to offer or create any real social utility. No. And then, you know, a regulatory environment where it's impossible to do any regulation, right? There's no penalty, certainly no penalty for like white collar crime anymore. And then you have this technology that is ascendant and is ascendant as a political force in Washington. And it really is, like, there's something very true about it in so many ways, that like, this is the sort of political, economic and governmental mode that the Trump administration has pursued as part of its vision for America. And you know, as America goes, so goes the rest of the world at some level.
I think that's right. I mean, sometimes it's called a kind of like casino economy, but like, actually at the casino, like, sometimes, I mean, the house always wins, but at some point you could, like, you know, cash out a little bit of money. but it's like, this one is like, yeah, it's the casino where it's like there's very little money and you never get any of it. But on that note, I want to highly recommend everyone to read Alex's article to get all the gory details that we just skimmed over. It's a hilarious piece of writing, but also, you know, as we just discussed, an illuminating one for the current moment. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Jeet.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.